Hi, you guys. Welcome to the Havila Podcast. I'm Havila, your host, and I'm really excited that you're here because we are starting a brand new series this month. And it's something I've been anticipating that it's going to be the perfect fall launch, like the thing that you need to get going and really get that fall under control. Because if you're like me, it's hard to navigate school and work and finances and food and, you know, all the things. So my suggestion is go get your walking shoes on, pop on those earbuds, maybe even get that cup of coffee, and let's spend the next few minutes really diving into what I think is very important, and it's purpose-driven habits. Okay, so this series is something that I could not do alone. Like, when I think about habits and I think about transformation, I cannot help but think of my friend, Jenna Zent. Jenna Zent is, well, we've been friends for a long time. We started in a core group. She ran her own business. I saw her when she had babies. She saw me when I was coming out of postpartum and all the things. And we really started doing life together for many years. And I'll let her share her whole story. But what I do know is that I watched her have this transformation. There's nothing like a front seat to a friend that you know it's not insta-filtering their transformation, but actually going through the work, doing the hard stuff. I watched her, we cried together, we laughed together. I watched her make hard decisions, and I watched her transform and really become really, I thought she was powerful, but she was like way more powerful at the end of this. And I saw her lead her life in a way that was so evident. I wanted in. Then she started hosting these classes for girls in the community, and that class grew to the point where I just saw my friends that were her friends getting this transformation, and I'm like, I want in on this. And so I signed up in January to take one of her classes, not knowing how brilliant it would be, how critical to the thing that I needed in my life. And by the time I walked out of that class, I was sold, and I thought, everybody needs to know about this. This is profound, because everybody likes habits, right? We have all these really popular books that are out there. And, you know, if you haven't read a habit book, I don't know where you live, because it's everywhere. But, you know, how do we manage habit and faith? How do we manage habit and being spirit-led and all the things? And Jenna just does that perfectly. So before we jump into like the content and the workshop, I want to welcome Jenna to the podcast. And I just, well, first of all, Jenna, thanks for being at the podcast.
Thanks for having me. I've already like awkwardly giggled like four times. I'm like, shoot, I was supposed to be quiet. I'm like, I was a hot mess. We did cry.
We did. It's really funny when you think about it on podcasts. I'm always listening. Like, are people laughing? Are they uh-huh-ing? Because my husband once said, stop uh-huh-ing. I'm like, oh yeah, note to self. But listen, I know that we have a ton of content to get into, and this is going to be a 3-week series. So if you're just jumping in today, great. You're at the starting point. And stick with us, subscribe so you can follow along, because there's a lot that we're doing together for the month of September. But Jenna, let's talk about habits, transformation. How did you get into this? Because this was not on your radar, habits and all that wasn't. So how did this start?
Actually, I'm kind of a free spirit, if you will. I used to be like, what am I? What's a good verbiage? And I just didn't have a ton of structure because I had a really high value for connection. And I thought, you know, now I know this in hindsight, I wouldn't have had the words for it, like pre-process. But I was like, oh, structure is the antithesis of connection. Like, you have to choose. They're at odds with each other. So I chose connection because I saw people who almost idealized structure. I got hurt by it and to the detriment of connection. So I kind of lived my life in reaction to that. So I had a like prioritized connection, which was beautiful. Like, my marriage was thriving. My community was amazing. I had so much fun with my kids. But the flip side is that in the other areas, I was living very chaotically. So honestly, my house was a hot mess all the time, because I was like, there's no connection with your house. So this is the bottom of the barrel. And it was just kind of a whirlwind of chaos. I kind of felt like I was flying by the seat of my pants all the time, because I was in the moment and I wasn't thinking ahead because I couldn't be as present, all these things. I think, and then what came to a head was I had this business called Turbans for Tots, and I have since sold it, but we were at this really crucial point in the business where we had to let everybody go. Like, all the things that had been working with our Pinterest sales, like everything that had been working to like generate revenue just changed all the algorithms. And it was like this, okay, am I going to keep doing this or do I want to sell it to someone else? Am I going to reinvest? I had done it for 8 years. Or is it time? Is there a transition happening? And so as we did that, we lost like 60% of our salary because we just made it bare bones to get it ready to sell and have to reinvest. And it was, man, nothing like going, we had a staff of 18 and then all of a sudden, and it was like a 1200 square foot office. And then I went back to my house. It was just me. And we kicked my 4-year-old out of his room. He lived with all my kids. We have a 4-bedroom house, but in that season we were living so tight. We were renting one room. Everybody else was in the other room. And then the office where I was sewing by myself instead of all my employees sewing for me. And in that season, like, I just felt this awareness of like, well, one, I remember like the first week going into it when it was like none of my staff was there. It was just me. And I was like, can I even do this? Like, do I have the skill set to be customer service, product development, marketing, all of, like, I don't know. I honestly had broken a lot of trust with myself and hadn't really had to face it because I was able to cover it by paying people on some level. And then it was like, oh, it's just me. And I felt like this overwhelmed, like almost like hopelessness. I'm like, can I do this? And I felt like the Lord was like, hey, there are areas that you're going to have to grow in. Like there are lids you've had, like there are areas that you are thriving in, but there are areas you're underdeveloped in. And like, this is your opportunity. Are you going to use it to grow and go after areas that you've kind of relegated as hopeless, like just this is who I am? Or like, can you lean in so that they're not forever following you around? And I just said yes. And that looked very simply like showing up and doing the hard things and running it solo for four months by myself. And in that time I listened to my first like behavior science book about habits. And then I got hooked because I love where like theory meets practical and I love brain science. And even the concept now with habits that you'll read universally is that you're supposed to start small for like big change, for transformation, for action steps. We also often want to start really big because it's kind of like Western culture, you know, yeah. Like go big or go home, right? All or nothing, like all those things. And just reading book after book, I'm like, oh, that's actually the opposite of how our bodies and brains are designed. Like it's repetition and practice and it's the small things that actually make people experts. Like read this one book about, it's called the Talent Code and they research all these talent hotbeds. So like this one place in another country that produces all the tennis pros and the golf pros and then basketball and little league and violinists, all the things. And what they found, like the key part of all of them is that they would have this, they all had different versions, but they would do deep practice where they would only do one thing for weeks. So like the tennis kids weren't allowed, when they were new, they weren't allowed to have a tennis ball for months because they were just working on their swing and the ball was like the next step. Or the violinists were only, like if they were learning a new song, they would cut every row of the music sheet and just make them practice for weeks on one row because it's the small repetition where we actually create new pathways in our brain. So when I heard that, like when I heard, oh, I've been trying this wrong for so long. I've had these grand plans where I'm going to roll out new change, but they're huge. I was like, I actually needed to go back to being offensively small with like some of the action steps I was taking. I felt a lot of hope. And then it was just like the course of a year and a half, slowly walking that out. And it started with my house because that was the area that I was like the most hot mess in. And then after like quite a few months, actually I was so bad that I would have friends come over. You know this story.
This is my favorite story.
And I'd be like cleaning my butt off for 2 hours so that it looked not toxic of an environment, you know? And then one time my friend sat down and she was like, oh, I'm so glad you're comfortable enough with me to like not clean up before I came over. I was like, ouch. In that moment, what do you do, Havilet? Right. Do you like say, actually, I worked really hard and this is my best effort? No, I was just smiled. I was like, So anyways, to fast forward, like I just saw, like I started with making my bed, running my dishwasher every night and starting a load of laundry every morning. Like those were just my, and I saw this major change without a lot of effort, like really small changes leading to huge impacts in my world and then building momentum after I just dialed in those for like a month, then was able to build to more. And then all of a sudden I had all these systems and rhythms in place that I never had before that automated those areas. And at first I was like, great, like habits kind of relegated them to the more like, I don't know, like structured or linear parts of my life. So like housekeeping or meal planning or fitness. But as I started seeing, like, did you point this tool at those areas? I was like, what else could I use? It's almost like you find a wand. You're like, what else can I point this at and see change? So then I started applying it to like relationships, like my marriage, because I'm a mom with 3 small kids and I've never felt like I had enough time. So doing some small, like what would be a small changed, that I'm just pointing myself at my husband, where I'm actually growing in love, not just hoping to grow in love, but systematically making some efforts and steps towards growing in love towards him and seeing that change. So yeah, it was like really the change for me was how much my environment was a hot mess, then seeing without like a ton of like, I don't know, like strong arming myself into it or really big overhauls. Like I still was Jenna, just a tidier version. And I didn't have to lose the things I love, like prioritizing connection. Actually, if anything, I got more honest that like the chaos that I lived in meant that my connection didn't always get, like whatever was the most urgent got my priority rather than, oh, my connection. So it's like, oh yeah, some days, like 3 days out of the week, I was playing with my kids. And then the fourth day, because my dishes hadn't been done for 3 days, we're like the stack. And then I'd have to do that and not play with my kids. And then, oh, laundry's been neglected for a week. So this, it almost was like I had a more honest perspective of like, oh, I actually think like I could find some structures enough that I'm still who I am, but they like, I get back margin in those areas so that I can actually prioritize connection and the things that matter to me more.
Yeah, I love that. And, you know, I think one of the things that hit me early on was that you kind of tackled shame like right away, where you were like, I need to actually, what am I telling myself about this? And I don't want to fast forward what you want to share, but I think it's really important to understand that this wasn't like a moment of success. This was a moment of like, I'm in a bedroom making headbands. I've had to let go of my friends, my staff that are friends, you know, and the last thing you want to do is cut finances when you have three kids.
Yeah.
You know, it's the most expensive season and you're by yourself. And I just wonder, like, it makes me emotional because I think about this part of you that's just like, it's not over. Like, I have to learn something new. And I think about myself and I see myself in you in that way, because it's not until you just go, I can't do this anymore. I have to figure this out. And I think many of us, we don't know where to start. So we have all this shame. We know it's not working, but we don't know where to start. And I think that's the power of what we're about to teach, is like that shame doesn't have to be ignored or neglected or, you know, dismissed or hidden. Like, I think that's one thing that amazed me about how you have taught, is you just acknowledge the shame and disempower it. Mm. And that is powerful. And so when I think about your story, I'm like, I know she hit on a lot of different things, but as you guys are listening to this, I watched her go from this really thriving business, I mean like Shark Tank worthy business, to like having to let it go. And then you didn't just fix it. You were like, okay, Lord, what do you want from me? Like, I'm open. And I just saw you sit and you did the work internally. And that's where I hope we go this week, this next month, I guess, in this series. And so when you talk about that, and I love it because you said it really got you what you really wanted. Because the thing you wanted, you thought you had to kind of make it happen, but your habits protected what mattered most to you, which is really cool. So here's my question. When you started reading these books and you started implementing, did you know that it would be life-changing?
No. I thought it'd be housekeeping-changing. But I think what I just started realizing is like, okay, I think like, for an analogy, I'm such a visual picture. It feels like habits are like in the Jenga tower. They're the block by block that builds the tower. So if I want to be thriving in every area of my life, I'm going to have to closely, like they're all made up of habits. Conscious and unconscious. I think we're aware of our conscious ones. And then also the second part of that I really realized was that there are two types of habits. Most of us think about behavior habits, which are the obvious ones, like putting your shoes out every day or loading the dishwasher. But the thought habits are just as important because they're linked. Like what you believe to be true, you're going to act on, and what you're acting on actually reflects what you believe to be true. So like having to do the work at the same time so that the behavior habits take root and that they're not planted in toxic soil of like, but I don't actually think that's possible in my thought habits. And I'm looping on just kind of waiting for myself to fail again. Like you have to look at both. So that was really big for me. And like you were saying about, like, did I think it was going to be that transformational of a journey? I really started with the shame because I think that's the interesting part. I think a lot of us are aware of our strengths and just play into them. And that's kind of where I was at. I just over manicured, like I kind of think of life as a garden, like all the areas, you know, your marriage, your health, your finances, your relationship with the Lord, your parents, like whatever. And I was played into the ones that I knew and understood and felt like proud of, I guess, on some level. Like I hadn't figured it out a bit, but the ones that I hadn't were just like overgrown because I'd try, like either when I looked at them, they were so far gone that I felt overwhelmed and like didn't know where to start, or they like there was left past attempts, evidence of past attempts to change, you know, like, oh, the shovel's still out from the last time I decided I was going to plant tomatoes over there and nothing's going on over there still. So it's like I either felt shame from where I was at or felt overwhelmed with how big of a task. And I think that was the difference where I felt like the Lord turned me from like, hey, you've been giving your attention to these areas that are really strong. And let's go look at the two areas that you've like aren't your strengths. Yeah. I actually had to have courage to be like, as I was walking towards those areas, if you will, metaphorically, like I felt a ton of shame. Like I should have figured this out. I'm an adult. I should have this. Like how have other people figured this out? And it's funny because like, I think sometimes people, I know there'll be people listening who relate to me like, yes, like I have thriving relationships, but like the logistics of life, I haven't figured out, or I have the logistics figured out, or I just think the reality though of doing this long enough, I've been a habit coach for a while, is everybody has an area they feel overwhelmed and stuck. They have one of those gardens that they're just not looking at. So I think don't discount yourself if you think you've got your house. I'm like, what is another, if you're honest, what's the area that you feel stuck, overwhelmed, don't know where to start? And like, that's where I would first start. Like if we're talking about habits, that's where I'd first start, is stuck in the area. Cause I think we're like, we know we're called to be thriving in all areas of our life. Yeah, I think we can tend to like focus on the six, you know, and be like, don't look over here at the two. Like, but this, I've got these six down, you know? So I had to first deal with the shame because it's like, I almost didn't even want to go engage with them because I was so full of shame. And it was interesting as the Lord did it. He was like, hey, there's like a difference, like almost peeling back the shame. Like, what is this voice? Like, and I just realized all these subtle judgments, like I said before, like I should have figured this out if I was an adult, other people. It wasn't like, because I'm pretty confident, pretty happy, like myself, I would not have told you before this journey that I had a big, like a strong voice of shame. But after having gone on my own journey and then walked like a couple hundred people through it, I'm like, everybody has their own flavor. It's just disguised. It's like, if you've done the work, the like the bits of shame that are probably left influencing your internal monologue are like more subtle.
Yeah.
And like what I think they mostly manifest is almost like passive aggressive. Like you caught the aggressive shame that's like, you suck. And you're like, I don't suck. I'm a child of God. But like the passive aggressive ones are like, oh, like you probably should have figured this out. Like, so for instance, I'd make my bed and I made it for a few weeks. And then I remember one morning looking and like being like proud, like a minute, I'm like, good job, Jenna. You're like 3 weeks in. And then I hear this like subtle, oh, you probably like, but if you're an adult, you would have figured this out like in your 20s, or should you really be that proud? It took you like 2 minutes, you know, all these things. And then I just started recognizing it for what it was, shame, rather than like, and I was like, hey, you don't get a vote in this. Like I'm actually proud of myself. So the first step I would say for anyone is actually kind of blatantly listening for shame to kick it out. I think it masquerades as conviction a lot, but it's actually like shame deflates. It doesn't motivate. Where like for me, cause then I would wrestle. I'm like, okay, God, what's the difference between conviction of like, I do actually want to do something about this area, and shame. And I felt like the Lord was like, conviction's like, oh, like there's more for me. And I feel inspired to go after the more, versus shame kind of like makes me want to disassociate and almost like self-deprecate on some level. And if I go into that, and it was funny, cause when I started wrestling with the like, oh, I'm going to choose conviction when I'm like, realize there's more and I'm not living in the more rather than shame, I almost felt like wrong. Like I just get to be like, okay, I want to grow. Yeah. Like I'm not living to my full potential. I want more. I'm like, but I didn't beat myself up. Like I usually, like, it almost feels like with my words, I need to sit in it for a half day or something like that to pay the price. Honestly, it feels like not fair, but I felt like the Lord at one point with me, he was like, why do you think you can add to the work of like what was done on the cross? Wow. Like your shame, like you're beating yourself up with your thoughts and words internally does not add to anything that I did. Like all that's needed when you recognize an area you want to grow in, like to change it to conviction, is quickly be like, oh, that's why I need a savior. Thanks God. Like you were aware of this and there's grace to do something about it. It's just that quick exchange rather than this lament that I used to do. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. And I think this is why the uniqueness of, I think, what you do and the message that I'm desperate to kind of convey to the world is the behavior loop with the thought loop. Because we are people of faith, right? We need a savior. We know that renewing the mind is a discipline of a person of faith. It's a believer's I want to say duty, but it's our responsibility to take every thought captive and go, does that line up with what God says? Is that true? And that's what I think is different from just maybe a secular habit, you know, yeah. of like, just do it. You believe in yourself. The thing is, like, you can't actually tell yourself who you are. Really, God tells you who you are, and you agree with that, and then you repeat what he said to you. And that's the core of the thought loop that turns into behavior, which means that there's lasting change. And I felt like that was what I got. And I know there's lots we want to go through, but I remember sitting in your class, and, you know, we have like 10 really highly intelligent professional people. I mean, people that own businesses, therapists. I mean, really, people, you know, it wasn't like a group where we're like, oh, here we go, you know. And I've been in the postpartum groups. I'm not against, or I'm not afraid to be in a group that maybe we are all kind of having a crisis, so we need to be there. But what surprised me was, as we're having this conversation with these different ones, and I'd sat there for almost 2 months, I found that they were talking about being in the class, but then also going to counseling or therapy or whatever it was. And I had this realization. It was like, it came to me, oh my gosh, we are trying to re-raise ourselves. Mm. Like, all of us that are adults, whether you're like 20 up to like 70, there's a part of us that needs to raise ourselves with compassion, without shame, without fear, without anxiety. And so a lot of us don't know what to do, and we're embarrassed because we're 50 and we don't know how to fix that, rather than, no, we all are learning to re-raise ourselves because A, our caregiver didn't have the skills. Yeah. They were broken. Maybe they were abusive. They also didn't live in a generation of accessibility. They weren't raised in a generation of maybe what are expected of women or men or the dynamics. So that's what I think is really profound, I think, is that it's okay to re-raise yourself. It's okay that you would never shame your child for being curious and learning. Yeah. So why would we do that to ourselves? Because we're just adults, versus like, no, I've never been here. I don't know how to do this. And no one taught me. So
even that analogy that you said, that re-raising yourself, like, oh, that's a lot of what I thought of, like, how kind would I be to my daughter if she was learning to put away her laundry for the first time in her life? Like, if she did not have this skill, where before I would try to like beat myself up for it, but like, no, I felt like the Lord was like, you're meant to show up for yourself in all these areas that you're learning and reparenting yourself the same way you're going to show up for your daughter. There's not a different standard, like, as much love and grace and kindness to grow. It's almost like a greenhouse to grow. That. Like, that's what you need to show up for yourself. And it was like, oh. And then I think it's easy sometimes, like you were saying, I think sometimes we can get stuck in what our caregivers didn't give us and become victim. Like, yeah, there's real pain there, but I think where the caution is when we slip into victimhood, who just camps in the pain of the past rather than healing out of it and doing something different. So, like, to me, acknowledging some of the stuff I didn't get, but being like, what am I gonna, like, but I can give, like, Jesus and I can go on a journey to like heal those by reparenting, learning something different, acknowledging like the identity things that I was messaged, and kind of unlearning them. I think of so much of this is unlearning before I can build. Like, I have to do the work of taking down some of those.
Deconstructing these thoughts.
And then the things I was told about myself or what was possible before I can then rebuild in that area, you know?
And also, like, habits are not just, did you clean your room and did you read your Bible? Because our listeners, and I know, I'd be like, some of you are thriving and you're like, check, 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 check. But you don't have a habit of showing your spouse love. You don't have a habit of spending time with God without a checklist. Like, habits are more about who we want to be and how we want to show up in the world and honoring that, rather than an internal list. And that's what I'm hoping Jenna and I can, because we called it purpose-driven habits, because the goal is, like, these habits identify, or they line up, and the way Jenna says it, not to take her quote, but they're little votes for who we want to be. They're like, they're a vote in the right direction. And so I'm curious, like, when we talk about habits, let's talk about how purpose and habits intersect, because that's kind of what we're going after a little bit.
Totally.
Literally, Jenna and I could do 5 sessions on just emotional, because her and I, like, this is a process, and I felt like I was going to cry 3 times as our conversation, because it is something that matters to me, and I want everyone to feel empowered to do this. But we're talking about purpose-driven habits, and so I'm curious, when we talk about our purpose, why do habits matter?
Yeah, it's cool, because I think, like, what's unique to us as like children of God is that, like, I would say all of us, my hope would be, know that we're made for something more, for something bigger. We have a calling on our life. We have purpose. We probably have words like from the Lord, from other people, from our, like, ourselves, that we know we're meant to, like, oh, that's part of our destiny. So I think call it purpose, call it destiny, call it all those things. But I think there's such a disconnect sometimes from seeing the person you're meant to be or what you feel called to and where you're at. And I think that to me is where I'm like, oh, I felt so hopeless. Like, I have these words, but I'm so stuck in motherhood, or I can't, like, I don't have the time or the finances. That is beyond the margin that I have. So I would either, I just wasn't living out of it. I was living in day-to-day survival.
Yep.
And it was like one day. I would almost relegate it to like when I, you know, when it slows down or when the seasons shift or when I'm not overwhelmed. And then I'm almost 38, like realizing like, it was for me probably 2 years ago being like, that's never going to happen. Like, I'm going to have to figure out how to like get there in here, not waiting for this idealized season where all of a sudden money's enough and time's enough. And I'm like, great, let me work on that thing. You know, like my back garden. You're like, no, actually, if my purpose was my extra activity, I'm like, oh, like, what does it look like to every, like in my current life, be continually taking steps towards my purpose. And it reminds me of like the GPS example is like the best that I could say, where I'm saying like my purpose is this final destination, like my city, like that I'm going to, but where I'm at, it's not enough for me to just know where I want to go. I have to have like a step-by-step how I get there. And I think the habit is the daily playing out of me getting closer to my purpose. And it's interesting because
so good.
One of the habits that I've done, I'm reading the Bible from front to back. I always say chronological. My husband's a very correct, precise person. And he's like, that is not chronological. And I'm like, okay, you know what I mean? I've always hopped around. Now I'm actually doing it in order. And he's like, well, and I'm like, okay, stop. I know it's not in order too.
The Torah is not in order.
Yeah, totally. It's 100% that. But what I've like, just keep my eyes getting drawn, because we're like in September, so 9 months in, and we're still in the Old Testament. And all these heroes of faith, because it's just 10 minutes, which I love. Like the whole, like we talked about small impact, or small action, big impact, like doing it for 10 minutes and then having it totally change my perception of the Lord and just like who we're called to be. And what listening to all these references to the Old Testament heroes that we all know, and they have big purpose and calling. But what I glossed over was all of the small, like the process. And I think that the habit is what the process is. It's like the daily decisions. It's even like we just finished Daniel, and he was his teenage, like for years, choosing to live differently with his like daily food choice so that when he was called, he was ready. Wow. I think a lot of times, like for me, I over glamorized the and suddenlies, and I thought that's how I was going to get to my purpose, is the and suddenly moments where the Lord miraculously came in, opened a door. But as I'm like reading, I'm like, Lord, you work differently. All these and suddenlies, like most of them were followed. I actually can't think of one that was preceded by a lot of process. And in the process were those little habits of like keeping, you know, all this, like I think about the sacrifices, like how many, like it's like a butcher shop of the Old Testament. You're like, how many times a day, how many goats were you killing every day? But realizing like those were habits that kept their awareness on what made them right to have relationship with the Lord. I'm like, if I lose those, how will I, like it was built into the Old Testament where I just thought it was a bunch of and suddenly. So here I am in waiting mode, not engaging in process, just waiting for my and suddenly moment. So for me, the Lord was like, okay, what do you want to do about it? Like instead of waiting, kind of almost being parked, like how can I thrive in all areas and get unstuck? So he just started calling my attention to areas that I had settled, whether it was due to circumstance, being overwhelmed life or shame. And for me, the areas that got flagged that I needed to work on were ones that had statements like, this is just who I am, or this is what my marriage is, or this is what my relationship, my mom will always be. And I felt like the Lord was like, at one point, I think maybe I had gotten there out of being gracious and like dealing with some past pain and being real about what it really was rather than trying to like slap a platitude on it, you know, like it'll be fine, all things do crap, you know, whatever. I think I had to make some like real adjustments to pain, but I had slipped out. The Lord's like, you slipped out of being gracious for yourself. And actually you slowly let go of hope that this could be different. And you had actually settled, where to me, I thought it was being gracious and kind and honest, but he was like, you've actually just slowly let go of hope that this could look any different. And you just have like sat there. And I was like, oh, and actually when I felt him be like, would you get your hopes up that this could be different, this area. And whoever's out there listening, whatever area that is for you, like that you feel stuck, that you felt hopeless, like, could you get your hopes up that it could be different. And it's interesting because in me going after like all my habits, I actually feel more. Yes, my laundry is done on a regular basis. Yes, my dishes are more done. I'm hosting a lot more, because of that. But what I'm noticing is I'm living out of my purpose more than I ever have, because I got my ducks in a row so that I could be headed somewhere. I'm not just like treading water, hoping my head doesn't go under. I have this forward motion. So for me, one of the reasons that I wanted a cleaner house was because I realized how I was hindering having people over, and I have a calling on my life to facilitate community. And if I don't have a space, I'm like, I don't know why I feel teary. If I don't have a space where I'm regularly inviting people over because I'm ashamed and it takes too much effort to get, I'm not living in my purpose. So I think sometimes we overcomplicate what like living in your purpose is. But I'm like, someday our lives is going to be bigger and different than this. But I know like we're going to have a big community, whatever that looks like. But I know that these Sunday afternoon picnics that I'm having at my house, because my house is clean enough, are part of the process. It's a habit of me getting there. I'm not just going to wake up and be this woman who is changing, you know, like a great, great audience. Like it starts here. It starts small. Like, will I be faithful with the small? So that's really the big difference of like, oh, like your habits lead you to be able to walk out your purpose. It's like the little action steps, one step at a time towards your purpose. And then to have the other thing for like me with like the purpose behind habits is that having a thriving life, I think that's part of our testimony. And personally, I might get emotional. I have some really close, I have some really close family members who I'm believing that the Lord will like capture their heart, like ones that have been there before, ones who haven't ever known the Lord. And I've been praying for them for years, which I'm sure if you have one of those family members, you have two. But then more recently, I felt convicted from the Lord of like, hey, but yes, you're praying and I love that and that's good. Are you ready to do another area? And I was like, okay, what else? What does it look like for me partnering with you, like co-laboring for their hearts to know you? And the Lord was like, what does your life look like? If your life is going to be a testimony, it needs to look different. Like it actually, the fruit of your life needs to pique the interest of non-believers. And if your family members are the non-believers, they get an up close view of all the areas of your life, not just like the church smile when you're waving, you know, like while you're walking out of church, like how you parent at Christmas, you know, late nights with your kids, how it goes down, like they're getting the back behind the scenes view. And I had this conversation with one family member at like a couple years ago, and they were like, I just don't see the difference. I see a bunch of rules and my friends and my community walk in love better than what I saw represented in the church. And I was like, oh,
yeah.
He's not seeing the fruit that makes the difference. Like he's just hearing rules. He doesn't see the fruit of actually like the Holy Spirit transforming us. So then it just convicted me of like, oh, I want to live like that. I don't want to do it for like out of striving. I don't want to do it to pretend like I'm perfect, but I want my life to be appealing and pique the interest of like, what are you doing different? I know you talk about Jesus all the time, but your marriage looks like none that I've ever seen before. You guys respect, honor, love each other. You enjoy each other. You have fun together. Like, I don't see that in what I'm seeing in these relationships that get divorced every like 5 years. And I was like, oh, I actually feel like this is part of my life thriving because of a bunch of habits. It's part of my testimony of reflecting the difference of what it looks like to have, you know, the secret sauce as Jesus. And if I'm honest, does my life look more appealing? Like, what's the state of my fruit? What's the state of the fruit of my marriage, in my community, my health, my parenthood, my finances, all these areas that I've built habits on? Like, what's the state of my fruit and being like actually honestly assessing that, and not out of religious push to pretend to be perfect. Like, that's really a big difference for me. Like I desperately want those loved ones to see the fruit. And that's what, like, that's part of what draws them back. I want them to see the evidence. Like, and I think I felt convicted about a year and a half ago when I was having this conversation with the Lord, like, oh, I'm not being awesome advertisement for Jesus. Mm. Like some of these areas that are, I'm stuck and that I'm not thriving, like that's not appealing. They can find better elsewhere. Like, oh, do a work in this, Lord, where you're going to be the one who ultimately plants the seeds and bear the fruit. But like, what is me giving my 2 cents to this process like look like in that parable of, you know, the widow and the 2 pennies? I'm like, I've got 10 minutes, but I want a different marriage because I want it to look different than what the world has to offer. Like I want that love member. And it's been so cool. The last like visit that this family member came to visit afterwards, they called me up and they're like, I would love for you. They don't love Jesus. They're like not in there at all. And they're like, hey, I have some friends whose marriages are really in pain. Like I want to pay for you and your husband to coach them because you have stuff that like they don't have. And I don't know anyone in my circles that have that. And like, and then they called back up and they're like a couple months later, like, hey, would you actually coach one of my friends in parenthood? Because like, she's not thriving in motherhood and she just doesn't have any examples. And I like, I can feel it teary.
Yeah.
I'm just like, oh, okay. Like this is the difference. Like this is going to be part of the testimony. If my life's meant to be a testimony, like I need to get my habits in line so that my fruit lines up. We all know that gardens just don't happen overnight. There's the tilling, there's the day in, day out care that leads to the fruit. And at one point I was like, okay, Jesus, I don't want Walmart secondhand fruit anymore. I want like Whole Foods gorgeous tomatoes because that's what's going to turn their heads and be like, oh, I haven't found this anywhere else. So I don't really believe what you believe, but what are you doing with marriage? Or what are you doing with motherhood? And like, I'm going to have my non-believers come to you because you have something we don't know yet.
Wow. I love that you have related that your habits reflect the fruit that you want to grow. So that becomes evangelistic, not by my habit is I'm going to go door to door. My habit is to post a spiritual thing online, but like actually authentically going after my behavior and my choices and my votes so that what I grow is undeniable without me having to preach it. Like that is brilliant. And I hope you guys can hear it today because it is a heart thing. You know, we're talking about those two behavior things, your behavior habit and your mind habit. And honestly, what Jenna is kind of, and I feel like what you're doing, Jenna, is you're telling us like, dig deeper. Don't just go, well, I'm going to make it my bed. So I get it. But like, why does it matter? What is your purpose? And if you have a purpose, which we believe you do, a unique role on the planet that only you can fill, we believe that, then your habits can actually vote for that or take away from it.
Yeah.
And you know, so much of, I agree, even in my own life, I almost want to say stupid, simple habits that I did early on, staying out of debt, stupid things. I mean, I lived at my parents' house in a room and it was not awesome, you know, at 23, 24 and I'm saving, but it worked to my benefit so I could go into marriage without debt. I mean, things like that, that you're like, again, I wasn't smart enough to know that's what I was doing. So don't get all like, wow, she's amazing. I didn't know. But those little habits allowed me to choose purpose quickly because I wasn't cleaning up the back. I wasn't being like, I got to go clean up all these other things. Yeah. And so much of when God tells us to go, we're like, I will, but I forgot to get gas in my car. I forgot to clean it out. You know, my phone isn't charged. We muddy up the purpose because we just aren't prepared. And it's that oil in your lamp.
It's like, so, right? When you were saying that, I was thinking of that parable. I'm like, oh yeah, you're right.
It's the oil in your lamp. And a sister and I happened to be, oh, this is amazing. I get to actually say this because it's such like a wow. But we were at the Vatican this first time I've ever been to the Vatican. I would just like to say that's not, but we were at the Vatican this summer and there was these little oil lamps that they had like a ton of them that were all historic. And I looked at it and the oil lamp was about the size of a hand. I didn't know this. And they were personal oil lamps. And I went, oh, that's what he meant when he said, to the virgins, right? Or the people that were preparing for Jesus to come back, keep your oil lamp filled. Mm. It was a hand size, a personal hand, like holding oil lamp. And I think that's what habits do is it allows us to have that lamp filled and ready. So when he comes, we don't miss it. We're not going back to clean out the car, right? Or we're not going back going, oh shoot, I should have been there. So I hope that you guys got what we're trying to, you know, I hope you picked up what we're trying to throw down because that is really critical. I love the whole concept of you and your family member. Like, you know, that's just instead of being ashamed that, oh, wow, I wish I could preach better or do this better. You dug deep and went, I'm going to make my behavior be so fantastic and so authentic and so not motivated by shame, but motivated by hope, which you said, I'm going to find hope for this again. I loved it. I love that. And I just want to say this even prophetically over you that are listening today, that the Holy Spirit is saying, get your hopes up.
Yeah.
Like I just felt it when you said it, Jenna. I'm like, there's life on that. The areas where you are defeated, you are discouraged. You are honestly despondent. You just go, I don't know how it's going to fix this. I don't know how I'm going to get, you know, they're gone or this isn't going to work. Just get your hopes up. And what can I do? How do I get my hopes up? You get your habits right because your habits are votes to hope. Your habits are votes to your future. So,
and I love too, I think the hopeful part is too, it's only your 2 cents as the widow. It's not like we have to show up, but God's can multiply. Like I keep seeing that in all the areas of these habits. It's not been like Jenna's ran a marathon and this, and that's why she's experiencing. Like I've given 2 cents. Like even with my relationship with the Lord, it started with a 5-minute walk because that's all I had at that point. I was just so far off, and now it's so much more, but I'm like, oh, it can actually be so easy. He just wants us to show up and co-labor, get your hopes up, but all you have to give is 2 cents.
That's it. And I hope you guys captured that. That's what I love about this. Jenna, I love this conversation. I cannot wait to continue this next week. You guys, thanks for jumping in, listening with us. If this spoke to you, leave us a comment. Let us know what you liked or why it spoke to you, or maybe a question that you have. We will read all of those and make sure that we answer anything that's there. And if nothing else, don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss next week's as we jump back into Purpose-Driven Habits with Jenna Zint. I'll see you next time.